Hey, yo, we about to tear it up.
It's the Breaking Atoms podcast. We break things down to the very last compound. My name is Sumit, a.k.a. the potty mouth of the fucking South.
And my name is Chris Mitchell, a.k.a. the actual factual.
It's one of them episodes where I ain't going to talk too much. I'm just going to get into it right now. Our guest today, as you can see from the description, could possibly say, motherfuck the big three, I'm big me, and no one would have a damn problem without it.
I would never
I'm say talking, that. I'm talking about the one, the only, the legendary, Donte Ross. Mr. Ross, how you doing?
I'm good, man. In London, man, hanging out. Things are good.
You're hanging, and you're hanging with the best of us. You know what I mean? It's the snobbiest hip hop fans you'll ever come across in the UK.
I mean, and that's saying a lot because UK guys are like super train spotty about hip hop.
Yeah.
They're like every break and every who engineered this shit. Dudes know my own records better than me. I'll be like, I guess. Like, I don't know. And I used to do a lot of digging here, and like I know like guys who are big diggers. Like English cats, and they know records like upwards and downwards. Like it's crazy.
We're like that. Like Anton Pruszanski often comes up on this podcast as comes, and we spoke to him. But like we all, he always reference. Like we're a couple of those. But we appreciate you joining us today. I wanted to ask you before we get into a lot of the new stuff, and we want to talk about the new stuff you got going on a lot. Do you remember the first time you came to London? When was that? Yeah, what were you here for?
I just got out of high school. And my graduation present from my father was a trip to Europe. My grandmother lived in Spain. Don't ask why, because she's a crazy Jew, and she moved to Spain. And she lived in this place called Fuengirola. So we had a house there. So when I had all these English friends, when I was a kid, I was like a reluctant model. And I'd done like some stuff. I knew these photographers and kind of fashion people. And they were like, come to London. I had these friends who I met in New York. I think I met them like walking down the street. They were just like, you're cool. And we became good friends. And I came to England with my friend Simon Fleury, who I haven't spoken to maybe 25, 30 years. This guy, my friend Jules Gayton was here at the time. He was visiting. He was living in America. And this a guy named Jeremy Henderson, who's American, but grew up in England. He was a famous skater, him and Mark Sinclair. Because I was a skater too. So I came here and I hung out with Simon and his boy Nigel. I bounced around. I stayed for I came twice. I stayed for like 6 weeks and I came back for maybe a month another time, or 3 weeks. I had a little shorty out here. I don't know, man. I liked it. I stayed in Fulham and I stayed in West Ham. In Hampstead. Sorry, not West Ham, in Hampstead. And I don't know, man. I thought it was cool. I bought Doc Martens at Camden, you know, in Camden where like Madness used to buy their Docs. And you know, I don't know, man. I was always a bit of an Anglophile because I love punk rock. I love The Clash. I was a ska boy when I was like 13. So I was into Specials and England. And I love the Beatles, like as corny as it is to say that. But I really grew up loving like lots of English music. The Who were like my favorite band as a kid. I was like, I wore Fred Perry's and the whole thing. Like I lived like a semi-mod fantasy in my head when I was like 13 or 14. I thought I was like Quadrophenia, but I had to take the train in Brooklyn every day. So I don't know, but I was always, needless to say, a bit of an Anglophile. So I always had this love for this like English kind of, I guess, mythical English kind of thing, like whether it's the Beatles or the birth of punk or the Who or ska music or all of this stuff. It all seemed very cool to me. And I always like the fact that Frankie Beverly and Maze was bigger here than in America.
Yeah, they were massive. They were massive.
I think England is sometimes ahead of the curve in terms of support or kind of identifying, you know, who some of the bigger acts would become. I like that about us.
There was always a really deep appreciation for soul music. And I'm a huge soul music aficionado. So, and the records that I like and the artists that I love always were really embraced here, whether it was, I mean, everyone from the Stax guys to Marvin Gaye to they were often bigger here than they were in America. Otis Redding certainly was bigger in England before he was in America. He was just a black act. He was like a pop act here. So and just the history of music. English people know a lot about music and culture. And I'm almost scared to say this, but the average English guy is smarter than the average American. More culture.
That's the episode title right there.
No, like the guy you like meet at the bar, like he knows more about like all kinds of shit than the average like American guy.
Right. I hear what you're saying. That was really interesting what you said about the how the UK and definitely this part of the world, how they embrace eyes. I guess the one that bucks the trend would be Loose Ends.
Of course.
So Loose Ends were big over the States, but over here we had trouble.
Oh, really? Pirate Radio really supported them.
So Pirate Radio, we spoke to Carl McIntosh, what was it, top of last year?
Yeah, January 2023.
And part of the story was they got signed to Virgin and, you know, very excited. Pirate radio stations really took to them, but the mainstream didn't. It was only until they started touring in the States and doing well over there that it worked from down here. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So they were produced that's the guy, only one that bucked the trend.
Guy from Philly produced them, Nick Martinelli. It was like that 808 style of R&B. He was like kind of the master of it.
Yeah, and it was intentional from their point of view. They wanted to work with Nick because they wanted to bring that broader sound into their music.
He had done Save the Overtime for me for Gladys Knight. He was an engineer.
Look at that.
So he was like, he kind of originated that 808 sound, and they were like the proponents. But that they were big. I mean, there was a bunch of English records that were big in America, like First True Love Affair. That was huge in America. I don't know if it was big here, but that's like a banger in America. You Can't Hide Your Love by David Joseph. That was huge in America. That's like a big gay black record. But a banger, like a floor house. That's a classic. Also, London Town by 52nd Street. A couple others, but that era of kind of dance music was really big in America. A lot of English bands. And I actually, a funny story. I DJed at Large Professor's birthday, and I played First True Love Affair on 45. We're playing 45s, and I don't think he knew it was on 45. And he started singing along. He's like, "That's that real New York shit. That's that New York shit." I was like, "Yo, Large, that's an English record." And he didn't know because it's such a New York record.
Wow.
Yeah, that's like a New York record, like.
Because I don't think it has. Listeners can tell me I'm wrong, but I never thought that record was such a British record. It didn't felt like it was so. I don't think you get it played in parties as it would do in New York, say.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big like boogie record, like, you know, post disco kind of Paradise Garage record, that kind of music. It was really big. And English, you know, Junior, of course, and a bunch of other stuff. English guys are really good at making that kind of music. Even Starchild, Level 42 that's a big black record in America.
Okay. Interesting. I was talking about music, and I want to talk about A&Ring, and what does the modern A&R look like now? I know that's a loaded question.
It's like a guy with an expense account who like can read research. It stands for analytics and research. It's like guys who are like on social media gossiping and ordering lunch. I don't think it means... I mean, it means you have a job. You can meet someone you know what's up, and you may actually be connected to people. Like, you're a good people person, or you know the right cats here and there and there. But I think the quantitative quality that people like me or people I respect who did A&R needed to have doesn't necessarily exist anymore in the same way. You know, and music is very niche and segregated, segmented now. So it's a... I don't want to say it's a weird environment. It's actually really hip hop's to me very encouraging right now, but divided and separatist kind of. There's different schools of it, and I don't think the modern A&R guy necessarily is going to gamble on someone just on their skill. I will, but most won't.
Fair,
yeah, Chris. Makes sense. So you know, you talked about you know what A&R in was back in your day. Who were some of the A&Rs from your class or your peers that you're like, you know what, yeah, I got ratings for them?
I mean, Matty C, you know, Matty C, who worked Aloud, him and Scott Free. I think Matty C probably the best A&R of all time, and I can't really say the guy's name now who's the other greatest, and because he's a bad word. So
but got you. We know who you're talking about, though.
You gotta throw him in there because he's one of the greats, and I've always said that because he understood Biggie and Mace. So he understood the greatest and the guy who dumbed it down officially. So, you know, and he brought out the Lox and Mary. So I always put him at, he's the high exalted to me. He's the greatest. And it's funny because people would always be like, yo, but you make that real shit. I was always like, nah, I like what he does. He makes really good music. So I was always a fan of his. Maddie, Faith Newman, she was pretty good, I think. She had some shit. I mean, he signed Nas, that's enough, right? My
True.
friend Sean C, who signed Big Pun, with Steve Rifkin. Rifkin wasn't really an A&R guy, but he's a great people person. So he signed people because he believed in the people. He let his guys sign artists because he believed in the people he hired. So Steve Rifkin is a great people person. So is Monica Lynch. And Monica Lynch is a good A&R person as well. Great marketing person and a real music biz legend. Who else? Chris Lighty was a great A&R guy, and a tremendous human being. One of my favorite people of all time. Rob Tulo, Reef,
Reef, yes.
the record
Yeah.
producer too.
Yes.
I showed him how to make beats, kind of like he'll tell you. Yeah,
You
he's
know,
learned.
one of his Scary Movies beat for Eminem and Royce. I love that record. Love it.
Yeah, that record was great. Oh yeah. That was ironically, I went to the studio and brought them weed when they were doing that record. That's really when I met M, because they were recording and they didn't have any trees. So I ran up to the studio and I brought them some McDonald's. So that's really, I really think that's why M always is nice to me and likes me. Like, we don't really know each other outside of that, but he name checked me one time and I did some shit on 8 Mile when he was beefing with Everlast. We have like a high level of mutual respect between friends, and I've always heard that was the reason why.
Got you.
Interesting.
Got you.
So just to double back quickly, Reef and Beats, because I need to, I'm going to raise that with him because I didn't know this. So we have to double back slightly.
Yeah,
So
Reef
you.
was like one. And Reef is really forthcoming about it. He always says that I was one. I just gave him a shot. Like, there was no reason for me to help him out. I just helped him out because I liked him, because he was my friend. And I showed him records to buy and encouraged him to make music. He's a great guy. He's like my brother. That's one of my brothers. Him, Stretch Armstrong, Bobito, Maddie. That's like our little crew.
Nice. We did have Scott Free on the show a couple of
Hey,
years ago,
he's a good friend of mine, Scott.
I wanna say we did an episode a couple of years ago, Dante, called If I Were an A&R. I have to go back, but we name checked you back even then. We were like Dante Ross, Matty C, and Scott Free. Like you are the three in terms of hip hop A&Rs for us, you are the three-headed monster. Like, 'cause you know what I love about you guys is that you took people on paper who weren't necessarily, if you look at on paper, weren't really supposed to be stars. Like, who
No
signs Big
interest.
Pun
Mobb Deep.
and makes him a star?
Mobb Deep had, I mean, they caught an L. Their first record was a flop, and Havoc shot the kid up in Def Jam, so he shot the dude in the leg. So they were like blackballed. Like no one was really trying to fuck with them. And Stretch and Maddie kind of did that together. Stretch actually worked at sorry, I have a slight runny nose. Stretch worked at Loud. He was the first A&R guy, and he quit. But Maddie and him kind of brought that in, but Scott made the records with Maddie. And that's the other part about doing A&R. Can you make records?
It's
That's
interesting
a
you
real
say that.
skill.
It's really interesting you say that because a lot of times, I call them the armchair A&Rs or people who want to critique music. It's like they don't feel they need to have any kind of experience doing that. And I always say to someone, like, look, if you're going to critique music, it would even help if you're in the studio and watch how a record's made just so you're exposed to that.
Of course. Like I'm one of those guys who goes to every session. Like, in my prime, I was at every single session, no matter what. Like I went to almost every single one, because that's what you're supposed to do. And not only that, like I have some skill to it. So like I could run the board. I know the automation system and the Neve. Like later on, I know how to run Pro Tools. Like so, I know how to edit and all that shit. So I have a skill set that a lot of A&R guys don't have. Like I could sit there and say, yo, you don't have a course, but maybe if you put this here and this here and this here, here, this could be your song structure. I'll just edit it myself. And a lot of people can't do that. I was in a session and I did that. And there was a younger A&R there. He was like, yo, that's ill. I didn't know you knew how to do all that. I was like, yeah, you should probably know how to do all that. It's not that hard.
It makes me remember about the No Need for Alarm album. Like you had to go back and edit that. Like, and I guess back then you didn't even have the tools you
I
had now.
didn't
Like.
edit. What I did was I had the album and I figured out literally by counting bars where he should end the verses and put the choruses in. So, and I wrote it all out in a notebook, and it was like 20 pages. And I was like, bar numbers, you know, bar 16, or like run 224s here. And that's how we figured it out, because it had no choruses, it was just raps. I was at a loss as to what to do with it, because I knew he was rapping so good. Like, he was rapping incredible, but it wasn't song-based. And it's still not that song-based, but I made it more song-based. And luckily, I had a good enough relationship with Dell and Domino, his manager, that they listened to me. About 90% of what I asked them to do, they did, which was cool.
I love that album. Love it. That's like, I'm a Hi-Ro guy. I love that album.
I mean, that's funny, because that record's like a landmark album. But I had, now I think it's better than I did when it came out, because I had higher aspirations for him. Based on the first album, I thought he could be, and Ice Cube certainly set him up to be his version of Digital Underground. So I thought that Dell was going to have a hit record on the radio. And that second album certainly threw that game plan out the window.
But, you know, hindsight is foresight. Look, you know, it's a great record. And when you look at how, you know, Dell and Hi-Ro helped pioneer that whole independent scene. Like, they're coming to London in 2 months. The whole Hieroglyphics crew for the first time. It's like, you know, 30 years later, there's still a demand for you. So it worked out.
I mean, they just, you know, last year they set out to do 92 shows. And they did 128 shows.
I was at two of those.
Yeah, I went to a couple of them. Like, look, those are like my really, really good friends. Like, way beyond music. Tajay is one of my best friends in the whole world. He's like my brother. He was with me at my father's memorial. Domino as well. Very close friends of mine. Dell's like my little brother, A+. All of them. OPO, they're Pep. Those are my guys. And Breakbeat Lou is rocking with them now. And that's my man, too. So, Hi-Rom, yeah, he's the DJ. It's way beyond just music.
It's beautiful.
Oh, I didn't say Festo. And, of course, Damani. That's my man, too.
Come on now. Before I hand over to Sumi, I was doing some research. Tell me, has there been any progress on this statement album you wanted to make with Dell? So it's you, Dante, Dell, and Domino. Dell, Dante, and Domino. Where are we at with that?
You know, that's a good question. I know him and Dom been working on a bunch of music. That's been happening. And I encouraged Domino to make music again. And I was in San Francisco, and I had Lord Skull knock out two songs with Dell. So Skull was with me, and we knocked a couple songs, one over a Madlib beat. And, you know, the thing we were always thinking about doing was the Dell and Doom album. We never got it done. So, but interestingly enough, I was hit up the other day by Curious, who's like, yo, D, I want to make a Dell album. You should help me make a record with Dell. And I was like, that's an ill idea. Let's figure it out. So that may end up happening.
Dell and Doom would have broken the world. Like, we would be finished. That would have been it. Just go. Leave it alone.
That's Ultimate Hip Hop Nerd record.
What?
Yeah, I'm smiling now. I'm smiling because that's just... Curious and Dell would be... Oh my, I mean that.
Curious rap, you know, really good these days. Like, I don't know if you've listened to any of the new stuff he's been doing. But he's putting out records, and he raps. He raps better now than he did back in the day.
Which is impressive.
Yeah, like, I think considerably better, actually. His pen is mean. So, I don't know. We're going to figure it out. I think we probably owe it to Doom to do it. So, we'll do it at some point, I think. And, yeah, that Dell Doom thing, man. We started, stopped, stalled. I sent Doom folders of beats, breaks, just, you know, like, just stuff to use, material. And Devin, who runs Nature Sound, told me, like, one of the last times he was with him, he was going through the folders and, like, oh, I'm going to use this one, I'm going to use this one, I'm going to use this one, and we never got it going. And we talked about it for 10 fucking years, and we never did it. And, you know, we never know who's going to be here, you know? And it's been, like, that's like, the story of hip-hop the last couple of years. A lot of my friends, a lot of people died.
That's right. Condolences to, you know, your Stimulated Dummies partners as well. Like, we'll talk about them later. But, you know, condolences, because you've dealt with a lot of loss. And I want to honor that.
When you get old, that's what happens. And you also realize sometimes, like, not sometimes, I realize all the time, I'm still here for a reason. I still got shit to do. You know what I mean? There's still chapters I gotta write and finish and stuff I need to do. So I'm still here for a reason, because I could certainly have, you know, I could have checked out, like I could be out of here. You know, I mean, like I'm in my late 50s. Luckily, I'm pretty healthy.
So that gym stuff you was doing, you know, we talked about it off mic. Also,
sobriety, not drinking, not smoking for over a decade. That helps a lot. But, you know, John Gamble was like super fit. He had a heart attack in his sleep. He was like a gym rat. He was like in incredible shape. 6 years old, bomb, out of here.
Purpose is important. I wanted to, you mentioned him, we're going to talk about it later, but you mentioned him already, Lord Sko. Talk to me about Lord Sko. I know you co-manage him. He's
great.
He seems like a really young cat. He's a young dude, he seems to me.
18.
But he seems like he raps with the old soul, and he's just got something from, you know how you could see a singer who raps from the pit of their stomach?
Of course.
It feels like he raps from his soul.
He got the
And
fire.
There's something to, yeah, so talk to me about Lord Sko.
You know who put me up on Lord Sko was Ural Droog.
Oh wow.
And I A&R Droog's new record. I signed him to the distribution company that I work with, Equity, and actually a single comes out in 2 weeks. It's Droog, produced by Madlib, Droog, Method Man, and Denzel Curry. First single produced by Madlib. And Madlib did a lot of the album. The album is ridiculous. It's his pinata or bandana, his Alfredo. It's like, you know, Just Blaze, Harry Fraud, Mos Def. It's a crazy record. So Droog and me have, I'm always like this with Jay Zone too. There's a few dudes. We have the never ending rap calls. We just talk rap bullshit. Me and Domino do it too. We have this rap bullshit call. Me and Jake One have a good rap bullshit call. So I have the constant rap bullshit calls with Droog the last year or two. Ma'am Loren and me have those too. So we had the rap bullshit call, and he was like, yo, I'm going to send you this kid. You're going to love him. I'm going to show you this kid. And it was Sko. So I went on Sko's Instagram, and I hit his Instagram, and he had DM'd me like 2 or 3 years before. And I never returned. I dubbed him. I never returned the shit. But I hit him up, and he was like, yo. I was like, I seen it. I know. But I told him, I said, when I hit him with the DM, I said, I know exactly what you're doing. Like, I see what you're doing, like, on some real New York dirtbag rapping shit. I was like, it's really cool. But I, you know, I didn't want to manage anyone, and I wasn't sure I was going to be in the music business anymore. I had just finished my book. I didn't have a job in the music industry, and, you know, I have some income, so I don't really have to work. Like, I'm, like, lucky, like, that way. I'm smart enough to do some things, so I don't really have to work. So I didn't know if I wanted to work. What I want to do, maybe just do nothing. Definitely not going the new pussy diet. I was eating. It was the pandemic, and I was just being a fucking, where food became like, it was like an activity. I'm going to cook food.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was like something to do for 2 hours. So, and I was managing Marlon Craft, and it all went to shit. Not necessarily amicable breakup kind of, and I felt kind of pissed off, and I was like, I don't want to manage anyone anymore. But Sko persistently asked me to manage him. And I was like, well, if I had a partner. So he was like, you know, Baba. And I was like, yeah, Baba would be great. Our boy Baba works at Equity, who works with Rock Marcy and everybody else. He's like my brother. So he was like, well, you and Baba should do it together. And I was like, it's great. Let's do it. And Baba didn't have a job at EQ then. And I helped him kind of get his job at EQ. And he helped me get my label deal there. In return, kind of, he was like my shepherd, you know, steel sharpened steel.
Yeah.
And that's my guy. He's like a guy like, I mean, he got his foot in the door in a big way at age 50, which is kind of incredible.
Say that again?
He's 50 years old. He never worked at a record company before. He never had a real job. He managed Fly Anakin. He knows everybody. But he was literally selling merch for Droog like 2 years ago when I met him. So he's just a guy who everyone respected, you know, because he's got body and he's serious about his lessons and he carries himself a certain way. He's got like a nobility to him. And I think, I don't know, man, the opportunity arose for him to get in there because me and him managed Sko together and they liked working with us. So he's there and I got a thing there. And so we do Sko together. And I think Sko is, how can I say, Bob is a spiritual guidance. I'm kind of like every day meat and potatoes with him with the creative, right? And Baba takes care of him on the on the stuff he has to do in New York because that's where he lives. But we're making a couple of records this year. We'll put out two or three records this year. One with Static. Static selected the whole project.
Come on.
Because him and Static are like, they're like, you know, that's like his big bro. And then another one called Piff, and that's got a whole bunch of producers. Harry Fraud, Static will have a couple on there. A whole bunch of people. Maybe Jake One, like a gang of motherfuckers. Like some no-name dudes. Wino Willie was a newer cat who's really dope from New Orleans.
He went to Droog as well. I like him.
Yeah, he's dope. He's talented.
I like him.
A couple other people, you know, we just throwing beats at him. This guy, A Lau, I don't know if you know who that is. He did, he liked more of a drill producer, but him and Sko have like, it's kind of like jazz drill thing they came up with. And it's like nothing I really ever heard before. And there'll be a couple of those on there too, because one thing, like Sko had a drill song on the last album. He's 18, just turned 19. So he likes drill music because that's the culture he's around. It's his peers' music. So we're going to open up a couple of different chambers on this one. There'll be a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Some features, a B-Real feature. A couple of other heavy hitters will be on there. You know, so when we get there, we'll get there. But we're sitting on like 20 songs. Now we just got to go through them, figure out what's the first project, which will be called the Piff Tape, which is kind of based on the Big Lebowski. So we're going to make a little movie, The Big Lebowski, with Jason Goldwatch. We're going to get this movie together and kind of like a psychedelic kind of thing. So we're going to do that, and then we're going to do the Static one. And if we have enough, we have the records. If we have enough time, we'll put another record out at the end of the year. That'll just be like with all kinds of different people, because the amount of people who are knocking on the door to work with them is crazy right now.
It's good. It's good. I notice when you talk about it, you smile as well when you're talking about the music. It's good to see that it still gives you that joy.
Of course, because there's nothing like the joy of discovery. Mm. So when you know about something first, that's like the best thing in the whole world. That's why I do this. That feeling never goes away for me. And I've always been like that about everything. Like, I was the kid who, like, when the other kids got up on some shit, I didn't like it anymore. I'm like, oh, you know about that? I'm on to the next. You know, I was always very progressive. So I always like pride myself on knowing things first, seeing things first in lots of mediums, not just music. But Sko's one of those. Sko's one of those I saw with the telescope from far away. And I feel like he's he has the potential to be bigger than music, if that makes sense. Like an Action Bronson or a few other people who have come along in the last few years who are just like complete characters. He has the music to back it up as well. Action had the music to back it up as well. So you know, I think that's, you know, he's like, he's getting sent scripts for movies, and, you know, he's like a good looking kid. People want him to model and all this other shit. So, you know, I don't know if you know this, but he's really tall.
I've never seen him. I've only heard the voice. I've never seen him.
He's got great, by the way, great voice. His voice stands out. So that's also good. We're from that school of Biggie, Meth.
Yeah.
You know, the voice stands out. That's what I mean. He carries himself, but you can see he's got the character. The way he dresses is very colorful. He's stylish. Yes. Like, he's got the whole look. And I think with you and Bubba, I think he's in for a long ride in this. He's got a long career ahead of him.
He steals the air out of the room. Like, all the little girls want to talk to him, and all the motherfuckers is like, who's this cool dude?
Mm.
It's bugged out. He has
you know, you were just talking about music discovery, man. I'm going to put a little A&R on you. I don't know if you know about this person. I discovered an artist last week. His name is Black Odyssey.
Oh, yeah. He's great.
Oh, my God. Yeah, Dante, amazing. I was walking down the street.
For a couple of years. You're late, bro.
Dante, my wife was listening to it in the house like last year. I'm like, what is this?
This is his second album. His first album is really good too.
Yo, I'm catching up, yo. I can't believe. Listen, I've made it my job to tell everyone I know about this album. It's that good to me. Oh, man.
He's amazing. Ooh. He's like, you know, he's also on that, like, it's funny you mentioned Black Odyssey, because one of the things I'm here to do is, so I love this new future bass R&B, whatever you want to call it, that's going on. And it's been there for a while. It started with Jesse Ware and the Luna George and Subtract and Sampha, and it's just evolved and keeps going. I found this guy named Collard. He was signed to UMG a couple of years ago, but he's a big songwriter. And I gave him a record deal. So he's unstimulated. So I came here to hang out with him. And I found another girl whose name I don't want to say, but there's an 18-year-old girl I've been following for a while who I'm trying to work with as well. Like I had to meet my parents while I was here and all that. That's like part of the-
Of course. Yeah. Dope. I mean, I, you know, it goes without saying, Dante, if you want to be put up on some people, some and different, in, not just rappers, like if you want a plethora of different acts and artists, young, you know, established, etc., from this, from the country, England and United Kingdom, you just let us know. We just put them in the right, and you make, you know, anything, I'm happy to. Man,
anything you guys like. Like, I'm really, like I said, this R&B, I don't even know what to call it, future R&B, that's just so, Kalela was part of it, like, but it evolved, right? And it's like, it's just, it's about one inch of, you know, obviously, Saul, Cleo Saul, and for Olympia Vitalis, there's a whole bunch of this I'm kind gonna, of music.
Children of Zeus, you know, so there's so that kind of R&B soul, neo soul, kind of 2.0.
I'm gonna put a name in the air. Have you heard of Emma V?
No.
I'm gonna send her to you. She's dope. She's been out for a few years. I saw her live at the Jazz Cafe about 3 weeks ago. And she jumped on stage with Zoe and Tall Black Guy and Deborah Bond.
Yeah, Emma V's dope.
She's dope, Emma and she V's does dope. Like house futuristic Emma sounds.
Emma.
I'll text Emma you the name.
I like Ego Ella May. She's dope.
She's dope too. Yes. Really dope. Check out Yasmin Lacey as well.
Yeah, I know about her. She's dope.
Oh man, you know, yeah. You're a proper A&R. You're proper.
What's your kid? Moses Ibaka.
Oh yeah.
I like man. That music to me is like the most happy music in the world right now. So I have like an old friend who lives here who's very wealthy. And I called him and I was like, oh, I'm in town. I want to see you. He's like, where are you staying? I was like, I got this nice Airbnb. He's like, you idiot. Come to my house. He has a fucking like, I didn't know I forget how rich he is. And he's like, this is your room forever. So I intend to be here more. I'm going to spend more time in London. Because basically it's exciting right now. There's a lot of shit going on. And I feel like this kind of music we're talking about, it's going to happen in America. It's going to happen. Like, it's coming.
100%. As I was saying, soul, R&B, jazz, all of that stuff is in the sound of it is making a huge comeback. Next year is going to be a massive thing. I mean, obviously, Beyonce done the country thing. That might have a slight influence. But I just think that that real R&B that we know and love, a little bit updated, is going to be a massive thing next year, as well as the jazz stuff.
It's really wavy and like, it's just like, it's cool. Because the artists can really sing. Like last night, I went with the young girl to a place right down where I'm staying, Troy Cafe, and it was like an open mic. But like, I mean, the Troy Bar, I mean, it was like, there was a couple of people there who were incredible. There's a couple of duds, but I was like, who the hell is this guy? Like, he's incredible. Like, it was just really cool. And it just reminded me of, a certain time in England when the music was great. And I think it's right there right now. So I want to be here a little more. And also I think it's the mixture of all the cultures, because there's like some African thing going in there, a dub thing going on, all these different sounds being mixed up together. I think it's like incredible. Like I really like that guy, Jay Haas. I like Jay Haas
a
lot.
Love him too. Yeah.
I like him dope. A lot. And I was up with him a couple of years ago. And I think he was like ahead of the curve, kind of. People have caught up to him, but he's really cool too. And I don't love a lot of English rap, but I like him. And you're gonna be mad at the other guy. Like, I like Central C.
You know, it's cool, man. He's West London. I love Jay Huss though. I love Jay Huss. His use of melodies, and he's got humor. I love his humor.
He's really clever.
Yeah. He's got a good sense of humor, and he works with a live band called The Composers. I don't know if you've heard of them, but
he's a star here. Like, you know,
yeah, for
I
sure.
I had this friend of mine, this girl, she put me up on him right when he was starting to pop off. Because, you know, when I worked at ADA, we put out Stormzy's record, America, and we put it out in Europe, and it was huge, but America was a flop. So America didn't stick, and I was like, you should. I told the guy who worked in the London office, he should go check out Jay Haas, and he ended up signing him later on. He also signed Giggs. Don't hold it against him.
No. Listen, man. We're open to it. We're a bit, I don't want to speak for Summit. We're rap snobs. I'm not going to sit here and lie in it. We are rap snobs. However, you know, we listen to Giggs, Black Odyssey. You know, I've got guilty pleasures too. It's all good.
Yeah, you know, I'm being honest with you, Mr. Ross. I fuck with Giggs. I like Giggs because of he to me at the moment where he's at in his status is he's the fabulous young OG. Mm. He's been on for so long, such a long time.
Yeah.
He's guiding people. Really nice guy, by the way. Of course, read as it comes, but he's a really nice guy. And I just like his trajectory. We also can see there's a few things that come into play with my liking for Giggs. Personal experience is one thing, but also we saw the crap he was up against with the feds.
That's right.
You know, when he got signed to XL, which would, you know, where, you know, see Cass is dead at the moment, he's doing wonderful things. He's on XL. He's elevating. We saw people who went through the XL, that kind of XL, system and done really well, Adele, etc. When Giggs was there, it was a chance for him to really elevate, but the feds really shut him down. And now he's having his kind of second wind where he's getting that love over in the States, etc. So,
Giggs took a Dr. Dre record and made it the unofficial UK anthem. Yeah, it's like, come on, man. Like, that puts you in the history books for me.
Yeah.
He spends a lot of time in America. He's in New York a lot.
Yeah. Yes, he can travel now. I say, stay out there as long as you can, Mr. Giggs.
Because he had a lot of problems with law enforcement here who just didn't want him to grow. So he will always from the guys now, Stormzy, J-Hus, whoever, Central C, whoever, they will look at him as that's the OG because
he was there before all of them.
Like before he had a record deal, he was charting in like in the top 40 in a place where, you know, we had HMV in Oxford Circus.
Yeah.
When Walk in the Park, which was his mixtape, came out, which is a song, Talking the Hardest came out, when he had the line in Oxford Circus, this guy wasn't signed. He was nobody.
They ran out of CDs.
It was like him, So Solid, and Dizzy Rascal, right? They were like the first ones.
Yeah. So yeah, he was on Def Jux.
No, he was on XL, bro.
No, in America. He was on Def Jux. Yeah, on America. I say he worked with Bun B because of Sign at the same time. But yeah, he was. But yeah, like Dizzy was like one of the, I think he was the first rapper to win a Mercury Prize Award.
I think Wolf, which is like first big, Grime Eyes. Yeah, it was massive.
Yeah. First Grime Eyes to win.
Very credible. It's a very credible award.
Yeah. So Solid were like, you know, there's like 50 of them really, but they were a collective who they get banded into the grime and hip hop side of things. But again, super real. Like streetwise, super real, and they made music, and they went number one
Was Miss Dynamite part of their crew?
No.
Miss Dynamite was slightly different. She came through at that time where we had kind of Garage
Sticky and
drum and bass.
I think you might be referring to Lisa Mafia.
Yeah, Lisa Mafia was So Solid. Miss Dynamite was
happened in America. It was like this close.
You know what's interesting, though? So Solid, as influential and as impactful as they were, they had a very small window, again, because the police and, you know, just shutting everything down.
A lot of hassles.
Yeah, I think their mainstream visibility was about a year, if that.
When I was here once when they were like the biggest thing, maybe 10 years ago, a little longer.
It would have been kind of late 90s,
early 2000s,
because you know they won a Mobo. They were honestly
when 21 Seconds came out. Oh my, oof!
Even now, the OG members of So Solid are ushering a new wave of cats coming through, helping personalities get their platforms. Like they figured out a way to like not only monetize what they went through, but to help others. You know, there's Black Pound Day now.
Yes, Swiss.
So there's, you know, Swiss of So Solid has an initiative where it's called Black Pound Day, where everyone, you know, he encourages people to go buy from black owned companies and stuff like that. And that's now become a bigger thing.
He's got his own shop
thing,
as well,
you know?
Now in the Westfield.
Right. Yeah, Ashley Walters obviously was So Solid. He's Top Boy, you know. Made that, and you know, brought in Ashley in Kano from an acting perspective. So there's like the thing about
Kano and Top Boy,
Sully.
That's Kano. Sully.
That's Kano.
Kano has been around so long. He opened up for Jay-Z when Jay brought Nas out for the first time at Wembley Arena after their beef. I was there.
That's crazy.
Kano, he's been around for that long, and. It's been about 20 years for Kano.
It's going to be 20 years. This year, I think.
So,
you know, Top Boy was huge in America. I don't know if you know that.
That's right. Yeah, no, we did the documentary, the audio documentary for Top, where we had all the Americans on there talking about food and peng and all that stuff. It was quite funny.
Everyone's walking around calling each other bruv. I was like, come on, man.
You are, but Mr. Ross, you are bruv now. Yeah, you are bruv now.
Even though we call you Mr. Ross. Let's get back to... The rap's not saying.
Let's talk about some American rap.
Tell me about, I don't know if this is true, but one of my favorite albums of the last few years is Silk Pyramids, Mayhem, Loren, and Buckwild. Was that idea to put them together?
Yeah, I put them together.
Come on.
And I can't remember if I introduced Muggs and Mayhem together. I think Mayhem just told me he wanted to work with Muggs, and I just connected them, like, somehow. It was, like, in the air. But, I put them together because they're both my good friends. I mean, Mayhem's the coolest guy in the whole world. He's, like, everyone's favorite person.
Yeah, I think my wife would leave me for Mayhem. She'd be watching TV, and when Mayhem comes on the screen, she gets happy.
I was out there. She's like, he's so nice. I was like, you don't know him that well. Like, he's not that nice. He's not that cool.
It's a great album, dude.
And he also put his arm around Skull very quickly, very early. Mayhem and Skull were super cool. So, you know, it's like it's all connected somehow.
I have to leave very shortly because I've got to pick up my kid. But what I wanted to ask Mr. Ross, how did the Korn remix come about?
I guess I'd done the Everlast records and those like those records.
It was just simple as that.
That easy. They called me up and then I took a famous breakbeat, we'll leave nameless, and I put it underneath it and I chopped it up and wow, bung. And I did a whole bunch of remixes for them. That was in that era when like rock bands would call me and they'd be like, I get this call from some man or they'd be like, hey, we want you to do this remix. And I'm like, how much did it cost? I'd be like, $25,000. So I'm like, okay. And like, I could just like all year long do those things for a couple of years. It was like crazy. And it was always a challenge because I didn't really like that kind of music most of the time. I'm not a fan of a lot of that stuff. So it was a challenge to make that kind of stuff into things I liked.
Fair enough. And what kind of sparked that shift from kind of going from A&R to producer? Because, you know, it's usually the other way around sometimes.
I had this deal at Def Jam. It was like entirely unsuccessful and I was really unhappy. And I didn't like where rap was going. It was like, and it's no knock on Foxy Brown specifically. I just didn't think she was that dope. And I seen how they were making the records. People were writing them all for her. And, you know, and it wasn't like, it didn't seem like real to me. And I just was like kind of disgusted by the energy. I was like, I don't want to be around this shit anymore. And I started kind of tapped out for a minute. And I've done this a few times in my life. Like I just tapped out. Like I'm like, I'm out. Like I'm going to do some other shit. Because I've never been scared to forge my own path, go my own way. Like I don't really care about that. That's like whatever. So me and Everlast, I hooked up and I don't know, we just started kind of plotting to do some kind of other kind of music. And that's what ended up happening. I mean, I was kind of listening to all this other stuff like John Spencer Blues Explosion and all these bands I like, Beck. And I think the Beasties, of course, the Beasties had a big influence because they did Check Your Head and they threw the rule book out the window. And I saw those guys do that. I thought it was so cool. So I think all those things, and I was listening to bands like Massive Attack and Radiohead and The Verve and going through my Clash records again and just listening to a lot of different kind of stuff, even stuff like Bob Dylan or Neil Young and all this other shit that I wanted to kind of tap into. John Prine and Everlast was, he was down for it. So we ended up making that record and, you know, we bought houses.
Congratulations, yo. I love that. Mr. Ross, we've taken up so much of your time, but you know, I'm gonna have to do my whole ending soliloquy. I'm a church boy, so I'm gonna have to close this one. Listen, thank you for everything you've done and for everything you're doing. Your choices and your desire to fight for the artists and fight for the art have soundtracked our lives and it's shaped our tastes. We would not be here if it wasn't for people like you. I look at, you know, Doom, Dell, your work with De La Soul, Busta Rhymes, and you know, you can find traces of their DNA in everything we do, whether it's music, whether it's in the office, whether it's just living our lives. Just want to say thank you so much. You are one of the GOAT A&Rs of all time, and we have ticked something off the bucket list because we wanted you for a long time. Thank you so much, man.
I'll be back end of the summer. I'm going to come out for Giles' festival.
Please come out. I'm going to take you to Austin and have Jamaican food.
I'm doing a paperback version of my book for Europe. It'll come out this summer, Son of the City, and I'm going to read at Charles's is reading. He has like a book thing there. I'm going to do that, and Jeremy's going to perform, and so I'll be back.
Okay, and yeah, just keep us posted. I mean, keep us posted. We'll keep ourselves posted on the details, and we shall be there.
Yeah, get it right, Chris. Get it right. Get it right.
Let me look. Yo, keep me posted. This is Dante Ross. Come on, have some manners, Chris. Thank you. Take care.
Peace to Dante Ross once again. That was fun. Real cool guy. There's a bingo that I want to play. I think it's called bingo, whatever it's called, house, whatever the F it's called. For the listeners,
I'm looking at you like, what is he talking about?
I might have to give a prize for this. If you can count how many times Dante Ross mentioned a previous guest of Breaking Atoms, I will give you guys a gift.
Yeah, yeah, that was a good one. I wanted to flex slightly and say, yeah, we've spoken to them. Yes, if you can name the number of times that Dante Ross mentioned a previous Breaking Atoms guest, we'll give you a gift. Can't leave on some here because people expect gifts nowadays. You know, not just
yeah. Yeah, we'll give you a gift. I'm not saying what they are or the monetary amount.
Might be a pound.
I'm giving someone a gift, and you can. And how to enter? I don't know, but just hit us up on Instagram or Twitter. And speaking of Instagram and Twitter, you can follow us at Break the Atoms Twitter and Instagram. Chris's handle is at I'm Kinetic. Mine's is at Hip Hop Chronicle. We'll be back with another episode. Until then, peace and love.
Peace.